It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Monday, June 8th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Almost two-thirds of Americans own and use a smartphone. And while Android devices dominate abroad, Apple and Android use is neck and neck in the U.S. Today, Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference kicks off with plenty of announcements regarding the company's software and hardware. But here's what's interesting. Whether we're talking security, mobile payments, or photo management, Apple, Samsung, Google, and even Microsoft seem to be in a kind of vicious cycle of innovation. One company makes something great, and pretty soon you can just as easily find a similar service or product elsewhere. Marketplace senior tech correspondent Molly Wood is here to talk more about this. Hiya, Molly.
How are you?
I'm good, especially now that I feel like no matter what ecosystem I'm in, I'm still going to sometimes just get all the features that I need because we're all copying each other now.
It's all just melding into one basic set of behavior.
And part of this, right, is about the fact that we've reached a certain level of maturity when it comes to smartphone devices that we're all now carrying around. But there's like really specific things like photo management and things like that, that let's just use Google and Apple as examples. One will develop and put out into the world, and then the other will kind of copy.
Yeah. And I think we're getting to the point. I mean, lawsuits notwithstanding, of which there have obviously been many.
So many.
The only way to put it at this point is copying. I've sat through Apple announcements and thought to myself, this came directly from Android. If you think about the way that Apple now does notifications as just one example.
Aha.
Notifications on iOS look exactly like they came straight from Android.
This is, I think, good for the user.
It is. I totally agree. I think it's rare now to come across a platform and think, you know, I wish I had that feature. You're not so locked in to one platform that you have to give up a killer feature of the other device.
Is there any other example of this, you know, outside of our smartphones? This must have happened with televisions, right?
It's happened to product development throughout time, if you think about it. You know, most cars are generally the same framework now. And there may have been a point in car history where one said, we have this thing called seatbelts, and the other one said, we have it too. And then they all got airbags, and then, you know, maybe they all got similar dash dials, to the point where it became standard features on a vehicle.
What should we call this? A vicious cycle of innovation?
It's like the midlife crisis. Like the smartphone is having a midlife crisis.
The smartphone is buying a convertible.
That's what it needs to do. The smartphone needs to buy a convertible, maybe make a career switch, go back to school. No, I mean, I think what we're seeing is that this is a maturing product. You know, it's a commodity now. And so nobody's innovating on milk. It's got to be the smartphone version of almond milk. There's got to be like a new product.
Molly Wood, senior tech correspondent for Marketplace. Molly, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Marketplace Tech is listener supported. To keep our coverage relevant and compelling, please make a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Please, your gift in any amount counts twice thanks to a dollar-for-dollar match from Newman's Own Foundation. Help us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by June 30th. In the wake of an announcement in recent days that the federal government's Office of Personnel Management was hacked, U.S. officials seemed to point the finger at China. What might Chinese hackers want with 4 million employee datasets? And how do you go about tracing a hack and holding people accountable when an attack crosses international borders? Robert Kanaki is Senior Fellow for Cyber Policy at the Council on Foreign Relations. Hi, Robert. Thanks for coming on.
Good to be here.
How do you trace a hack back to a country? How does that work?
What's probably going on right now is that law enforcement and the intelligence community are working together to trace it back hop by hop to the people who were behind the attack. Typically, somebody's not going to sit at their home computer and directly try and attack a site like OPM. Instead, they're going to want to go through multiple other computers to hide where they're originally coming from.
Is there a diplomatic procedure for cybersecurity issues like this? How does this all play out when something like this is discovered and announced?
The conversation that is probably going on is happening fairly quietly, probably through law enforcement channels, and probably it is simply beginning with a request for assistance with an assumption that it was a criminal group, and then looking for the Chinese government to lend assistance.
And there's also been some executive orders that hopefully allow law enforcement and the U.S. government to put more pressure on countries.
On countries as well as third parties and companies within those countries. So not necessarily having to target the Chinese government per se, but maybe being able to sanction a Chinese bank that's involved in illicit funds transfer or a Chinese technology company that's engaged in the hacking activity, being able to limit their access to the U.S. and therefore the global financial system. That can have a real impact on their business and cause them to think twice about engaging in that kind of behavior.
Can you talk a little bit about how valuable this information that has been taken is, and why or why not that might help us understand where it came from?
According to press reports, the information that was stolen was basic, personally identifiable information of U.S. federal workers, names, social security numbers, date of birth. If that's true, if that's all that was taken, that kind of information is incredibly valuable if you want to commit credit card fraud. If you're an intelligence agency, this kind of information really isn't worth that much. You don't really care about the social security numbers of a clerk in the Commerce Department. You want to get information that is of intelligence value, information that you can use to a strategic advantage. This information probably can't even really help you get that kind of information.
Robert Kanaki is Senior Fellow for Cyber Policy at the Council on Foreign Relations. He's also former Director for Cybersecurity Policy at the National Security Council. Robert, thank you very much.
Thank you.
By the way, yes, I'll be at Apple's Developers Conference today, and I will be tweeting my adventures. I'm at The Brock Johnson. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.